You're listening to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast with John Rabin. And here we are again to the Yes, I'm Still Sober podcast. I'm John Rabin, you guys. Hello. How are you doing? I hope you're staying sober. If you're not somebody who wants to be sober, I hope you're staying sane. Good week, everyone-ish. I'm not talking about the election, of course. I'm just talking about in general with your health and mentally, physically, emotionally. I know that a couple of weeks ago I talked briefly about the coronavirus, and we're like, hey, don't, you know, just wash your goddamn hands. You don't need a bunch of masks. And it's I know it's a concern, but we're not going to talk about that. Just wash your goddamn hands. It's like, don't stay away from large groups. I don't know. Whatever. Just fucking take care of yourself. It'll be all right. Wash your goddamn hands. That's the only thing that I can think of. I'm doing all right. I'm having it's amazing to me who I've become as a person when I went from being a comedian who thought, you know, rock and roll lifestyle comedian, like, yeah, we're going to go out drinking all the time. We're going to be, you know, I'm living it up. I am a barfly motherfucker. This is who I am. And then, you know, turn into a heroin addict. Like, I'm living on the edge, kind of like, ooh, gutter. Like, this is who I am. And now I'm like, hey, my shipment of zinc came in. Yay, zinc, everyone. This is who I am now, with my smoothies and supplements and whatever else. I guess you just got to be who you are and deal with your little issues as they come up. But I'm all about the zinc. I will say this about, because this is the day after Super Tuesday, and I'm not going to talk about the election. What I would like to talk about in relation to that is the idea that, I mean, and this is not really related to elections so much as related to human behavior. And I know I've talked about it before, but it's amazing to me the amount of people who feel that they can't say things because it goes against the narrative of how other people believe. And I think what they mean by that is that they believe a certain way, but everybody on their in their bubble, on their feed, on social media says one way and they don't agree with it, but they're afraid to speak up because, you know, they have this pressure like, oh, you know, I don't want to get into an argument. I don't want people, you know, I'm starting shit with other people, but I believe something different from that. And I want to kind of give you guys an encouragement. If you feel this way, I want you to, here's my encouragement to you about that pressure that you're feeling. Knock it off. It's the goddamn internet. Get off of Facebook and Twitter. That's what I feel like. That's how I feel about that. Is like, you know, everybody on my Facebook feed feels this way. Well, then don't read their bullshit. It's not important. Are you getting any pressure out in the real world when you're talking to people? Because I've never had anybody, you know, in the past, I would say the past several, more recent, the past several years. And as loud as people are on the internet, they are not in person. So you just be who you want and don't worry about the internet. Don't worry about comments. Don't worry about tweets. And I know it conflicts. Some people like it is real. There is some influence there. Maybe so, but not in my world. In my world, I'm going to say whatever the fuck I want, you know, on my podcast, on, you know, in person. But the other side of that is, you know, it doesn't, the thing that doesn't matter is, you know, don't, you know, why are you vocalizing every thought that you have anyway? Like, it's just nobody, you know, why the idea of just blurting out your opinions to when nobody asked is just, to me, is irritating. It's just like, he goes, let me tell you what I think. Nobody asked you. Man, just live your life. You know, it's one thing if somebody gets in your face about an opinion you don't agree with and you want to have a discourse or you want to correct somebody because you're like, hey, first of all, fuck you. Secondly, I disagree. But, I mean, how often does that happen? You know, maybe a coworker who's like, you know, hey, Daryl, you're making everybody uncomfortable. And no, you know, why don't you go deliver that coffee to that table and quit being, you know, a political pundit? Like, I get that, but just take it easy, man. It doesn't matter. You know, by all means, avoid getting into it with people on social media. The reason that you're feeling like, I don't want to stir shit up. Yeah, no, that's, you should go with that feeling. That's not you being a coward, by the way. That's you being an adult. You're not getting into it with somebody who's loudly vocalizing every thought that they have because they need validation for whether they feel like they're doing something, and they're not really. I mean, unfollow them and go about your life. It doesn't mean, I don't believe, you know, and people will disagree that there actually is something with some influence that you can have on the ends of whatever. I don't give a shit. It's not worth your headache. You got enough problems in your life without feeling pressure to say what you think because you read something you disagree with. Don't get into a comment. Don't. YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, under, you know, Pornhub, wherever you like to do comments, just don't live a comment life. Just live a life. That's what I'm saying. So I did vote yesterday in the primaries, and I went to here in Austin, I went to the George Washington Carver Library, which had the shortest wait that in my area at the time. It was still like a 45-minute wait to vote, and it was interesting. I had a really great moment, is because I was standing there in line with this large man who had an NFL alumni jacket on. And we were just standing, and I actually, you know, I had my headphones on, earbuds in, and I was kind of listening to some music. And a guy had come out to tell everybody instructions on what you did with the long sheet of paper, and you put it in, and when you're doing the voting, make sure you're going to have to hit more on some, because some of the candidates for president, there was like so many of them that it was on two pages, and at the end you got to make sure and hit the print button, don't hit exit or nothing will be saved and you'll have to start over and do it again, which makes you wonder, well, why is that even an option if you're already giving us the option to review all your choices and then print? Why is there another button? The technology and the interface and the software, when I finally did vote and, you know, get there and look at it, I'm just like, wow, this might be a shell of a program from 1993. We're about 27 years behind, and that's fine. You do what you like. But so this dude who was next to me just kind of turned to comment, and he's just talking to me, and he's just going, he goes, man, I mean, I got a degree, but this is some confusing shit. And I was like, why are they gonna make it so complicated? And I turned my headphones off, and I was like, yeah, man, like, totally, this is just absolutely just ridiculous. And we just kind of chatting just kind of randomly. And then this this woman comes up who's working for the she's talking to people. She's a volunteer talking to people, recruiting people who want to work for the Census Bureau, I'm guessing, to take a census. And she's like kind of talking to different people, and she starts talking to him. She ignores me completely and starts talking to him to see if he'd be interested, if he was looking for a job. And I'm wondering if she ignored me because I'm a white dude and started talking to him because he was African-American. You're black. You could use a job, older white woman thinks. I don't know. I don't know if that was the immediate reaction or not. I might be projecting, but it kind of felt that way. And she's talking to him and, you know, notices the jacket, and he starts talking, and he's like, yeah, I played for the Dallas Cowboys in the late 70s. And I went, holy shit, is this who I think it is? And he starts talking. He goes, yes, Thomas Hollywood Henderson. And I just kind of went inside. It was like, holy shit, Hollywood Henderson. This rules. And so let me just lay out who Hollywood Henderson is. All right. He's a linebacker for the Dallas Cowboys from 1975 to 1981. He played in the NFL from 75 to 81, but mostly for the Dallas Cowboys, all right? His claim to fame is that he had a serious coke problem, like to the point where he had like a squirt bottle with cocaine in it that he was squirting up into his nose during games, because he had done so much coke, like it had rotted like a hole in his nasal cavity, because he was doing it at the beginning before you really knew what you were doing with the cutting it up really fine. So he was like, you know, he wasn't cutting it. So he was like snorting rocks, gravel, basically. But he like got into a whole lot of fucking trouble. And, you know, of course, and He ended up serving 28 months in prison. And that's when he got clean. He got clean in 1983 because, you know, he went to prison for 28 months and got his, and that's when he started getting his life together and started, he got into recovery. And he's done a lot of charity work. He's got a set up a recovery program here, like an AA meeting here on the east side. He's got a charity. He earned, he raised money for a community football field and track area, and he did all this. And then, after being 17 years clean in 2000. He won the goddamn lottery for $28 million. He served 28 months in prison, and he ended up earning $28 million in the lottery. And then, by the way, and then a little bit later, like a few years later, I don't remember, I didn't look up the exact amount, but a few years later, he won the lottery again. But, I mean, only like 20 grand. And he also has said in interviews that he spent like in the 5 years up to winning that lottery again, like he spent probably about $20,000 on lottery tickets over a 5 or 6 year period. So it's like, it's more of a kind of like, yeah, I did that kind of a deal. But as soon as that was the thing, is that he started doing public speaking and all this other stuff. And as soon as he hit $28 million, he continued to publicly speak, but then all of his fees went to his charities. So he's been living off of that. So that's who Hollywood Henderson is. The lucky son of a bitch who is, he said some things, like my favorite thing is he's one of the most memorable quips, and I had to look this up to get the exact quote. He goes, one of the most memorable quips in Super Bowl history, when he said that about Pittsburgh quarterback Terry Bradshaw, because it was, Cowboys versus Steelers back, in the late 70s, of course. And he said that Terry Bradshaw, who's from Louisiana, couldn't spell cat if you spotted him the C and the A. But the thing about it is that he, let's see, what was the other thing I wanted to look? Oh, yeah. He said it's taken all of the 13 years to find the courage to confess, apologize, and set the record straight. It is still shameful and painful to discuss about his about being a – he was a crack addict before crack addiction hit the national scene. He goes, Thomas Henderson is not the same guy he was 13 years ago or 20 years ago. Because he says, basically, when he sobered up, that Hollywood died and he became Thomas Henderson. But he still, you know, he still's recognized by Hollywood Henderson. I mean, because that's part of who you were. And also, it's just a kick-ass nickname. It really is. You know, it's hard to it's hard to ignore that. But what I loved, this quote that I love that he said, he goes, I am self-confident, emotional, and dedicated to the cause and lifestyle of sober living. I have never been a humble man. False humility is a con. I've never tried to come off like that, never will. And that's fucking dope. That is really badass. And you could tell because he totally was, you know, he was not a humble man. I mean, he wasn't a dick, but he was very much, yeah, I've done this and did this and this is what's going on, like, because we ended up talking. So let me cut back. So that's who Hollywood Henderson is, all right? So he's in line. The census woman is talking to the both of us, to him, and I'm just standing there, like, asking him stuff. And she's kind of got an accent from the East Coast and... You know, she's like, oh, I didn't know who you were. Oh, from the Dallas Cowboy. Okay. And she's like, and he's like, oh, you from here? And she goes, no, I moved here 5 years ago. I'm from New York. So they talked a while and she walked around. And when she walked away, Hollywood and I decided to talk shit about the Giants for a bit. And that's how our conversation started, is we just shit on the New York Giants. And it was glorious. It was a great thing. And that was that's what we did. We just kind of talked. We talked about football for about 5 minutes. But then we talked about drug addiction and recovery for like 20 to 30 minutes after that, while we were standing in line. Because I had told him, I said, yeah, I'm a fan. I'm a fan from, you know, of course... growing up as a little kid of that team he was part of. And I said, but also, and this is true, I was a fan of his because we watched the video. They showed a video of him, of a talk that he gave when I was in rehab. And I was like, wow, all right. You know, and it really stuck with me. So I always had known who he was, and it was... Man, and it was weird because I knew who he was before that, but I remember people talking shit when he won the lottery, and he goes, oh, that, you know, and people were talking mad shit, like that drug addict one more, but he buys, you know, now he'll have drugs for the rest of his life. But the thing was, is that he was clean for 17 years when he won. He had already changed his life 17 fucking years at the time. He's been clean for 36 years. This is what he told me when we talked. 36 years he's been clean. And so it was an interesting, it was just a great conversation. And it was just a chance meeting. And get this. So he's got several videos. He's got one video that you can watch for free online. You know what the name of it is? Yes, I'm Still Clean. I shit you not. I'm like, get the fuck out of here. I'm like, did I hack you? Because I didn't know that. I didn't know the video, but yeah. So on YouTube, if you want to watch a talk, it's like 8 parts, you know, video. So I guess it's about an hour total. But it's called Yes, I'm Still Clean. Thomas Hollywood Henderson. Just crazy, man. That's just, it's weird how that works. Yeah, so we're standing in line. So we talked about that, and he asked me what I was up to, what I did, and we found out I was a comedian. He actually ran. He goes, oh, he thought that was great, and he goes, do you do a lot of jokes about drug addiction and stuff? And I went, oh yeah, yeah. A lot of my act is about self-destruction, self-deprecation shit. A lot of it's about how dumb people are, but yeah, I do. It's observational humor, but I definitely got my drugs, dark drug shit. But he goes, all right. He goes, I got to give this this talk to this organization. He said, I don't remember the details, but he goes, but they gave me some stipulations, and they said no cussing. And he goes, and I don't like being told what I can't say. And he goes, now you got to understand, I'm not dirty. I don't like, I don't like cussing all the time. But when you tell me that, and I went, I know exactly what you mean. He goes, so I was thinking about opening, and he goes, I wanted to run this by you. I was thinking about opening with, what's wrong with you motherfuckers? And I went, good. It's a good opening line. I approve. So I gave him the green light, and I wish I would have exchanged some information, because I didn't. All I did was take a dumb selfie with him. I took two. I took one of us grinning. Or I took one of us both just kind of looking at the camera like we were pissed that we were standing in line for 45 minutes, which was accurate. And then the second picture, I'm like, we should probably smile. So I will probably, for this episode, put up one of those pictures. I'm guessing I'm probably going to do the one when we're not smiling, because that just feels right. But the one last thing I wanted to talk about with that, because we had a good conversation and it was great, and it's something I'm going to remember, just because it was, it's just one of those things that it's just, of all the people to stand in line with in the city, that's who I was right next to. But we were talking about different stuff, and luckily he didn't ask me, so do you go to, what 12-step do you go to, or anything like that. He didn't ask me, because I would have told him the truth, which is that I don't go to meetings, and I don't follow the program anymore. But we were talking about the different meetings, because I told him, that there was a little bit of a difference when I started going to meetings because I wanted to, not because Travis County told me to, kind of a deal. And he mentioned something that he found interesting, because he had, his coke crack problem, but he always did AA. He did different, like he said that there was a Cocaine Anonymous meeting that he had was involved with, but the group conscience wanted to switch it to Narcotics Anonymous, so go from CA to NA. And it was funny, he had an issue with NA as a whole, because what he said was the idea that this NA kind of started, it's like started with a base of resentment. Because when you're in Narcotics Anonymous, it's almost the same as, it's the same exact program as Alcoholics Anonymous, but they talk about, they don't say sober, they say clean. They don't say alcoholic, they say addict. And it's basically, and I think he's correct on that, I think they kind of started it kind of as a resentment. Now, granted, it's a resentment to people who were in AA, who didn't want to hear people call themselves addicts. They wanted to, don't say clean, say sober. Like people who are like hard-nosed about AA, just say alcoholic. Just say sober, don't say clean. Like they don't, like in some way it's that people were separating it. And the whole idea is, which is all very nitpicky. The whole thing is just ridiculous, because it's just, it's the same beast, just different labels, which goes back to what I've said before, which is that the people who created Alcoholics Anonymous, when they created it, they had the forethought to say it's principles, not personalities, because we can already see in the future that our members are going to be kind of assholes. They're going to be really huge dicks about this, and it's going to turn a lot of people off. So we're going to have the forethought to say, hey, follow the principles and don't listen to the members, which is it's not good. But that's what they did. But that's an interesting idea, because if you base your system out of already resentment, like if everything you base is in spite of this other 12-step group, you're already not in a good mindset. You're already, nah, we're doing our thing. You know, because we did drugs, not your weak-ass alcohol. And I know that mentality, because I had that mentality too. You know, in rehab, you know, heroin addicts stayed with other heroin addicts, kind of almost like prison. You know, you stay with your own kind, but not really so much that there was, but there was a little bit of that because heroin addicts are kind of elitist assholes. They think their drug's the best. You know, our drug is the most dangerous. Not like you stupid meth heads and your weak ass little alcohol. Like, it's just the whole idea, and it's that whole, you know, I'm the bigger drug addict. I'm the bigger addict. I have way more. I've destroyed way more in my life than you. Like, it's a competition. You can still hear sober people do that, and like when they're giving speeches or like in a speaker meeting and in recovery, you'll hear people talk about, you know, oh, I was the bigger one. And it's just, man, it's just fucking ego. That's all it is. But that's kind of a thing about when you're getting clean and sober, whether you use 12-step program, whether you use an alternative one, whether you do it on your own. It's best to start out like fresh, like with a good purpose, for a reason for it, not to spite anybody, because that's just going to end up going, you're going to go in the wrong direction. You're not going to feel good about yourself. But that was kind of an interesting thing that I had never even thought about. And when he mentioned it, that he thought that NA people, you know, that the program kind of started in spite of AA. Like, we're different, kind of, you know, with that, like with resentment, like this underlying resentment. And the thing is that in retrospect, I started thinking about the different meetings I've been to, because I went to NA meetings and I went to AA meetings. And yeah, there was a little bit, it felt a little bit like that in the meetings that I had gone to, some of them. So it's interesting, which if you are looking for meetings and you get turned off by one and you're not, and you're like, I'd like to do a 12-step program, but the meeting that I went to sucked. Just realize that every 12-step place is going to have a different vibe than another one. So if one sucks, go to another one. You know, don't give up on that just because people are assholes. They're going to be assholes everywhere, but there are good people. It just requires some effort. That's what I would recommend. All right. I'd just like to thank Hollywood Henderson for making my Super Tuesday super, and to give me something to talk about this week. It was great. Thank you guys for joining me. I'll see you next week. You guys hang in there. This has been Yes, I'm Still Sober. I'm John Rabin, episode 88. Later.